Happy Halloween, Conference USA fans. Welcome into a special episode of CUSA Insider, the official podcast of Conference USA. As you can see, I am in full costume as a skeleton. I hope that it doesn't distract too much from today's episode. We're here to have some fun. Everyone that you will see on today's episode will be dressed up in some way, shape, or form. So I hope you enjoy it. But we've got some stuff to talk about today. But before we get to that, I want to remind you that you can subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or Amazon Music if you would like to listen in an audio format. But if you are watching us right now from YouTube, we thank you so much for joining us. We are having fun here with the video segments that we are putting together for the podcast, and we hope that you will tune in. So if you're not already, please follow Conference USA on YouTube so that you never miss a new Conference USA Insider episode. All right. We have a lot to get to today. We have a cross-country championship this weekend, women's soccer and volleyball in full swing, football previews, football recaps, and two interviews all packed into one episode. So I am super excited to get things started here with a very special guest. We have Coach Prime in the house, everybody. But we have Kensley Walters here with us to talk all about the CUSA cross-country championship, which is taking place in Oxford, Alabama, hosted by Jacksonville State this upcoming Saturday, November 2nd. So Kensley here is our communications assistant, her first time on the podcast. So everyone welcome her in. And she is here to tell us all about this weekend's cross country championship. So Kensley, take it away.
Yeah, of course. So as you were saying, the championship is this Saturday, November 2nd. The women's 6K starts at 8:34 a.m. Central Standard Time. And the men's 8K starts at 9:34 a.m. Central Standard Time as well. Both women's and men's races will be on ESPN Plus this year.
Yeah, I'm super excited about that. I mean, we are moving forward here at the conference office, and this is a very exciting time. First year for our cross-country championship to be broadcast. We have several other championships that will be broadcast for the first time this year. So yeah, I'm super excited about it. If you're going to get up on Saturday morning and watch game day, you might as well have another screen on with the cross-country championship for sure.
So all of our schools are competing, so it's going to be really exciting. So Middle Tennessee, after collecting their fourth men's title and fifth women's title, Middle Tennessee was ranked number one in our preseason poll. And even though I wasn't at championships last year, they were ranked number one because they won in both men's and women's races.
Mm-hmm.
They've been able to bring back some standout returners on the men's side, senior Vincent Yagon and junior Brian Kiptu. And then on the women's side, sophomore Eleanor Toe, which was last year's freshman of the meet, and senior Faye Niat, who came in third last year. So they've got some star returners coming back for the championship.
Yeah, sounds like it.
Yes. And then one in particular that I'm looking forward to watching, Odelia Jeptumba, a freshman from Eldoret, Kenya, has made an incredible impact on the team this season. She has led the Blue Raider women in every race this season leading up to the championship, and she's received four of our weekly honors, so three Freshman of the Week awards and one Athlete of the Week award.
Wow.
So that's pretty impressive for a freshman.
Yeah, so would you say that Middle Tennessee, you know, they were the favorite at the start of the season. Are they the favorites going into both the men's and women's races this weekend?
I think that they are still considered among the favorite to win. I'll tell you who's going to give them a run for their money, though. That's Liberty.
Okay.
The Flames over there in Virginia. Run for their money. But the Liberty came in second on the preseason poll because men and women last season got second in both races.
Okay.
They definitely have some talent as well, fresh talent and veteran talent. This season, the Flames returned two star seniors, Nicholas Kiprowicz, who was CUSA's seventh place conference minister last year, and then Adeline Fairley, who was CUSA's second place conference minister last
okay.
year. So looking forward to seeing them back, two seniors. So last season type deal.
Yeah.
And then one newcomer that's going to be really cool to see is Allie Zeeland. She's a freshman from Forest, Virginia. And she's been a top contributor for the Lady Flames this year, earning five conference weekly awards.
Okay.
Three Freshman of the Week and two Athlete of the Week. So again, very impressive for a freshman.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, the race is scored. There's an individual champion and then there's team champions as well. So the individual championship, especially on the women's side, sounds like it's kind of up for grabs between those two freshmen. Yeah. So that'll be super interesting to see for sure. And then Liberty coming off of a indoor and outdoor track and field championship here in Conference USA, which there's some definite crossover between those two squads with the cross country side. So we'll have to see. 8:30 a.m., 8:34 technically for the women's race, 9:34 for the men's race, both on ESPN+. Really looking forward to having those live on broadcast television. Well, television broadcast streaming, I guess I should say. But we have two other sports that are really starting to get going here and close to conference championship side or time. So cross country is this weekend, the very first CUSA championship of the athletic year. But then just coming up next week, we've got the women's soccer championship. And so the final week of the season is upon us. We actually have a huge matchup tonight. FIU is playing Jacksonville State at home. It's vice night for those ladies down there. And if they win that game, they're going home with a regular season Conference USA championship and the number one seed in the tournament. So, which, by the way, the tournament's at FIU. So that would be a huge home field advantage for them, not only playing at home, but being the number one seed. So if they don't win tonight, though, things get a little crazy. So I was talking to our sport administrator ahead of time, trying to get the seeding scenarios and the tiebreaker scenarios. They're nuts. I'm not going to go over all of them. But let's just say, if FIU doesn't win tonight, if they tie or if they lose, Liberty could come up and get them. So if they lose and Liberty wins, Liberty's the regular season champion. If they tie tonight, if FIU ties tonight and Liberty wins, then they're co-regular season champions. And so, and then there's a crazy scenario where at some point New Mexico State could still win the regular season title. And so there's some really exciting stuff going on with women's soccer this weekend. So that game tonight is on ESPN+. It's at 7 p.m. Eastern time, 6 p.m. Central. So you can watch it and you can watch the Panthers possibly clinch a regular season title and the number one seed in the championship. So super exciting stuff going on there for soccer. And then on the volleyball side, we talked about it on the podcast last week. There was a huge matchup between WKU and UTEP, both 10-0 in conference last week. They played each other. WKU went in there and swept them 2-0. So WKU now leads the conference, still undefeated in CUSA play, 12-0, and UTEP dropped those two games. But there's about 3 weeks left of the volleyball season, and WKU doesn't have the easiest out. They still have to play Sam Houston and New Mexico State, who are currently tied for third in conference, and they have 8 wins. So it's not an easy out for the Hilltoppers the rest of the way, but if you've been around for a while, if you've been a CUSA fan for some time, you know that those WKU ladies, they can play. And there's a little bit of a volleyball dynasty happening down there. So we'll have to see how the rest of the season plays out. But it's November, guys. We got hoops starting too and on Monday. And so things are, yep, hoops, we're ready. And so things are really just starting to heat up around here. But we have some really great content coming for us in the next couple of minutes. Here in a second, Kensley's going to scoot on out of the set and Josh is going to take her place, and we are going to recap some weekday CUSA games. See you guys in a second. All right, Conference USA fans, welcome back. We are here with Josh Yonis again, our Assistant Commissioner of Strategic Communications. Skeleton's back in the house. We have great value Pistol Pete sitting over here right now. He's even got the great value logo on. New Mexico State fans, don't come after us. We know it's not perfect, okay?
You should have overnighted the costume if you wanted me to really be, you know, in character today. So
he's the generic brand.
I'm rolling with what I got at home.
And then our producer as well is in the house right now, dressed and ready to go. Ted Lasso is here, everyone. Welcome in to our Halloween episode. We're having a good time over here. And we're ready to recap our final week of weekday CUSA games. I feel like it's perfect that I'm dressed as a skeleton today as we put to rest this weekend's or this week's weekday CUSA games once and for all. Great, great time. But we have some games to talk about. So we'll start with Tuesday. We'll go in chronological order. Let's start with that FIU New Mexico State game. FIU came out and they showed out for sure. Put 34 points up on the board. Talk us through that game.
Yeah, I mean, the Panthers, I think that they feel that they fell short on Vice Night and that was just kind of a blow to them, to their season. And, you know, not that they're totally out of a bowl game. You know, there's still an outside chance that, you know, that they win out, they could get to that 6-win mark. But man, oh man, Eric Rivers last night or the other night put on an absolute show. I was there on hand in South Beach, got a chance to see him in person, and had three just long touchdowns, 51, 52, and 62 yards. He was just an incredible deep play, throwing, you know, one-handed catches. He was doing it all for the Panthers. It was an FIU program record, second most by an FBS receiver this season, and the third most in a game in Conference USA history. So certainly, you know, obviously one for the record books.
Yeah, I mean, like stat line. So just real quick, 11 catches. 295 yards on 11 catches, three touchdowns. You mentioned how long all three of those touchdowns were. I remember we were texting back and forth about the stat line, and you texted me, it was like 11 dot 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 295 dot 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 three touchdowns, and I was like, 11 catches, like that's all.
Yeah,
and it's so crazy. So yeah, he absolutely showed out, and you're right. I think that they kind of lost a tough one on Vice Night, had to come back and win one.
Yeah, and you know, they weren't just doing it offensively, defensively. They held New Mexico State to just 12 yards passing, which is the fewest allowed by the Panthers in program history. And another double-digit tackling effort for Travion Barnes, who continues to just be an animal on that FIU defense. But yeah, it was the buzz was going in South Beach, and they picked up a big one. You know, on the other hand, Tuesday night, you know, had a much different game.
Yes, another low-scoring game for Sam Houston. Yeah.
If you enjoyed Super Bowl, whatever it was, between the Patriots and the Rams when it was 13-3, you probably loved this game. You know, a 9-3 win for Sam Houston. It was almost 15-3. It was almost at least, you know, a few more points. They overturned a fumble return for a touchdown at the very end of the game.
Honestly, though, my favorite was the halftime score. 3-2. Was the halftime score.
I'm pretty
score.
Sure for most of the game, the Dodgers-Yankees game was outscoring.
Yes, it was. It was. It was crazy.
But, yeah, I mean, despite being outgained by La Tech, Sam Houston's defense forced four turnovers, got the ball back on downs in the Bulldogs' last two possessions. So, really, when it counted most, you know, they were locking them down. But the, you know, La Tech, I mean, I think what's going to haunt them from this one is you finish 1-for-4 in the red zone. You can't win a game if you go 1-for-4 in the red zone. I mean, that's just, you know, you only come away with a field goal. They turn the ball over three times within the Bearcats' 7-yard line. So just missed opportunities are just going to be kind of the storyline around this one. And really, it was kind of on both sides because there were six turnovers in this game.
Yeah.
And neither team was able to score points off of turnovers.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So, you know, really the only difference maker coming down to that, this Jay Ducker touchdown run, which, I mean, if he gets into open fields, you know, good luck bringing him down.
We'll see if it's in here. My absolute favorite part is the celebration at the end. He waddles like a duck. So that is so funny.
Staff member who, put out the duck emojis with the highlight of that play.
Yes. So. Yes. So funny. But like, I mean, we talked about it all season long. Louisiana Tech's defense is good. It really is. Okay. And so that's why this game was so low scoring. Like you mentioned, all those turnovers, it was very much a defensive battle. But again, it was also a mistakes on the offensive side battle as well.
It was kind of, you know, a little discouraging for, you know, when we talked about this game, I'd said, you know, Sam Houston is a concern if Hunter Watson can't take the field, and he ended up starting and still just, you know, again, even with as good as that La Tech defense was, I really expected a lot more out of Sam Houston. Unfortunately, Hunter Watson exited the game again due to his non-throwing shoulder. So hopefully that doesn't sideline him for too long. You know, again, non-throwing shoulder, maybe he can kind of tough through it to get back out there for their next one. But, you know, they're 7-2. This season is certainly not over for the Bearcats
at all.
They're still in the title race and everything. But again, it's just kind of that lingering concern. That's like, all right, you guys got to clean this up. You know, they had to win the last one 10-7, and then you win the next one 9-3. I mean, you're not going to win 10 games skating by like that.
So. No. It's definitely going to be, I mean, I think that the next couple of weeks for Sam Houston, we were just talking about this right before we came on, but I think that Sam Houston does have a easy next game, easy-ish. Who knows? They're playing Kennesaw State, which we saw last week. Not an easy out for everybody, and they're playing in Kennesaw, so they actually have next week off. They're not back until the week after that. Same with FIU. They both have a bye next weekend, so we'll see those two programs back on November 16th. We're going back to Saturdays, everyone. Yep. It's hard for me to get in my head as well, but there were a pair of games on Wednesday night that I think really put those two front runners in the conference in the spotlight. I predicted it last week, and then I got scared because I was like, oh, Jacksonville State still has to play Liberty, but I predicted Jacksonville State and WKU would be in the title game, and they are still surviving and thriving for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. This was, I mean, just having watched, you know, the tail end of both of these games, this was a perfect way to cap off weekday CUSA. A couple really fun ones. Obviously, there was a lot of hype around Jack State Liberty last night. And then, you know, even the WKU-SAM game, you know, WKU-Kennesaw game, you know, WKU jumped out to a quick lead. You know, Kennesaw was still fighting throughout mm-hmm. that one. But, you know, to your point, seeing the two top dogs kind of punch another ticket and take another step towards you know, potential CUSA championship berth was pretty entertaining. But we'll start with Jack State. Trey Stewart, I think I can go ahead and speak this into existence that we will probably have co-offensive players of the week between Eric Rivers and Trey Stewart.
It was crazy.
The two of them just had, I mean, not only career nights. I mean, you're talking about record-setting, you know, CUSA record-setting nights.
Yeah.
You know, break off a 75-yard touchdown run on their second possession to get things going, and then he did not look back from there. I mean, he was just, you know, running all the way through that Liberty defense all night. He carried the ball 27 times for 232 yards and four touchdowns. He's the first player to rush for at least 210 yards in back-to-back games since 2015. The first to score four rushing touchdowns twice in a season since Devin Singletary. Some of y'all might know that.
Yeah,
From FAU back in 2017. So, yeah, just an incredible night for Trey, and this offense just continues to roll.
Absolutely. Nope, can't be stopped. And we were just talking about this, too, before we got on. Like, Trey Stewart, we were like, he has to be at 1,000 yards at this point with these games. But he wasn't. He really didn't start to shine until he got into conference play. And now he is just running through everybody, and it's great to see. And, again, Tyler Huff doing the same thing. He dominated on the ground last night, 130 yards. So it's just that rush offense. I'm telling you, I said it, I think, last week. If you cannot stop the run, beware when you're playing Jacksonville State.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that these two alone are averaging 276 yards a game combined in their five-game winning streak, I mean, that's probably, you know, top 10 in the country for just, you know, sheer rushing numbers.
Yeah.
Just the two of them. So, what they're doing right now is incredible. And really, you know, going back to what you were saying about Trey Stewart and kind of his slow start, it reminds me a lot of Quentin Cooley from last year, where, you know, he really didn't come onto the scene until week four, week five, and then obviously just took the league by storm from there. And he wound up winning CUSA Newcomer of the Year.
Right.
And Trey Stewart very may well be, you know, on his way to the same, you know, the same path. He transferred in from, I believe it was, you know, Georgia Military Institute. I don't
know.
It's a Division II school. forgive me for not researching that one ahead of time. But, it seems like he might be the favorite for Newcomer of the Year. If it's mm-hmm. not Tyler Huff, who also just transferred in from Furman.
Exactly. Exactly. Rich Rod had that team firing on all cylinders. Really excited to see what they can do going forward. They are going to be at La Tech next Saturday, November 9th. So it's a 3:30 afternoon kick, CBS Sports Network on national television. Be sure to tune into that one. We've talked about it, Louisiana Tech.
I was going to say,
they've got good defense.
Yeah, might be the Bulldogs.
So we'll have to see how that one goes. But to cap it off tomorrow night, look at me. Last night, we had WKU and Kennesaw State blackout in Bowling Green, and it was a fun game.
Yeah, I mean, death taxes and WKU getting bowl eligible. for the sixth straight season under Tyson Elton, WKU will be headed to another bowl game. Took down Kennesaw State last night. They're, you know, last week's Cinderella. WKU said, we don't care. We're going to play our game. I mean, it's really impressive that, you know, week in, week out, we kind of say, okay, you know, is this going to be the week that, you know, WKU kind of stumbles a little bit? No. Caden Vellkamp, you know, all these guys just continue to be a model of consistency. This was the Caden's third straight start with at least 260 yards passing and three touchdowns. So, I mean, the guy just goes out there week in, week out, slings the ball, sharing the ball with everyone. I think he threw all three of his touchdowns last night to three different guys. I mean, that offense, and then, you know, beyond that, shout out to Elijah Young, running back, who
yes.
the team's first 100-yard rushing performance. We always talk about the pass game with them, but, you know, that was crucial for them, especially you race out to an early lead, and then from there, you just want to run the ball, right, and run the ball effectively, and that's what they were able to do. They were just able to dominate possession. He was just, you know, he averaged 7.4 yards per carry. He had five runs of 10-plus yards, so Yeah, shout out Elijah Young for, you know, bringing some a little more balance to the WKU offense.
Yeah. Yeah, we got to talk to Elijah Young back at Football Media Day, so I've just kind of been, like, rooting for him all season long, ready for him to get going. And, yeah, that first 100-yard rushing performance of the season. And then you mentioned this in your release. Topps' greatest achievement of the night might be that they were perfect on penalties?
Yeah.
What?
Not a single yellow piece of laundry on the field called on WKU last night. And that's been... They're a top, you know, 25-30 program in fewest penalties per game and fewest penalty yards. But to go out there and pitch a perfect game in terms of not getting a penalty, I mean, that is impressive nowadays.
It's crazy.
You know, to just when you think about the amount of things and the amount of calls, you know, holdings, you know, some of the
ball starts,
some of the most common penalties in the game. No, WKU, again, just going back to their consistency, to just their, you know, the grit that they have in the team. They don't make mistakes. They execute well. I think just all around, I mean, they have been one of the most impressive teams in the league so far this season.
Yep. And I'm excited to see how they continue to do as we go on. Next week, November 9th, they will be at New Mexico State in Las Cruces. But we have a friend who was there on site last night, our friend Michael Barker from CFB Campus Tour. He is joining us here in just a second. Take a look. Joining us again here on our final weekday warrior segment here on CUSA Insider Pod, we have Michael Barker of CFB Campus Tour joining us after two more wonderful weekday CUSA games. So, Michael, thanks so much for being with us.
Absolutely. This has been a fun month, and let's talk about the two that we went to over the last couple of days here.
All right. Well, first up, on Tuesday, we'll go in chronological order. You got to go to Sam Houston to see the Louisiana Tech at Sam Houston game. A defensive battle, a 3-2 halftime score at one point. Some crazy stuff happening there. It was Halloween Eve. So I know there's some people out there in costumes, but tell us a little bit about your experience down there in Huntsville.
Yeah, so this is the third time I went there. The first one's the FCS playoffs in 2021 and then back-to-back years. And, you know, I saw Sam Houston the previous week beat FIU scoring 10 points. And this one, they won scoring 9 points. So he talks about a defensive battle to win two games and put up 19 points. That's pretty incredible. And the thing that struck me is that even towards the end of the game, it was 9-3, and La Tech had the ball inside Sam Houston's 43 times in under 6 minutes. And they came away with 0 points. So it just is a credit to that defense. And I will tell you that the students showed out really well. It was a blackout night down in Huntsville. Same thing as last year, Bud Light put on a free tailgate. So some late arriving fans, as you would imagine, why you get the bracelet and, you know, where would you rather hang out, in the free beer section or the first quarter of the game? But they eventually matriculated their way over there. And one thing that really struck me was they covered the track with turf. It looks great. Any FBS school should have a no track. And I know that there's renderings for an upgrade on the stadium too. So great record, great crowd, stadium upgrades. Everything's trending up for Sam Houston State.
Yeah, absolutely. They notched their 7th win in that game against La Tech, and it was a close one again for you this week. I actually thought about you as I was watching the game. I was like, man, Michael's gotten to see some really low-scoring, close games these last 2 weeks. But we were talking a little bit before you came on, and you were telling me there was one fan in particular. There was a viral video from last year. We don't have to talk about that one. But there was one fan in particular who was already in the Halloween spirit there at Sam Houston. Can you tell us a little bit about the Pokemon you found at the tailgate?
Yeah, last year our fan got ejected. This year it didn't happen. Pikachu, with great popularity, was making the rounds at the Bud Light tailgate. So I snapped a photo. I don't know how many photos there are out there of Pikachu pounding Bud Lights, but I have one. And then once Pikachu found his way inside Bauer Stadium, everybody wanted to take a picture. So I found one where Pikachu was posing with a couple fans and holding court. And so you never know where you're going to get, especially these weeknight games. And students, they want to have fun. And just because it's not, you said, Halloween Eve, even though it's not the 31st, they're going to still come out and have a good time at the game.
Yeah, you had Pitt Bill last week, Pikachu this week. A lot of fun. Pikachu made it on the broadcast, so it was a lot of fun. Well, tell me a little bit about your game then on Wednesday. You got to go to Bowling Green to see Kennesaw State versus WKU. Obviously, last week you got to see Kennesaw State beat Liberty at home. So Got to see Sam Houston 2 weeks in a row and Kennesaw State 2 weeks in a row. Unfortunately, didn't work out in the Owls' direction against WKU, but that Hilltopper squad is something serious for sure. What was your time like there in Bowling Green?
It was amazing. This is my fourth game at Western Kentucky 3 years in a row. It's really an underrated college football destination. The town loves Bowling Green football. Bowling Green loves WKU football. And another stadium that made improvements, they put in a brand new press box. It looks really nice. They switched from the roadside to the home side. But the environment, they put in the effort. So before the game, there was a Flo Rida concert right next to the stadium.
I saw that.
Oh, man. So Big Red is going crazy. And, you know, it's apple bottom jeans, boots with the fur. And so they, you know, the students eventually came over to the stadium and it was a blackout there, too. 2 years ago, I saw Shaq DJ Diesel do it down there. And they put in the effort. And so, yes, I think that that Kennesaw State loss heightened their awareness. They didn't want to fall victim to that. And, you know, we're all proud. You guys had Coach Bohannon on the previous week as the coach of the week and got plenty of recognition. But Western Kentucky was ready for it, and it showed.
Yeah, definitely. And there was something else. You know, we talked to you on the podcast last week about your trip there to Bowling Green, and you let us in on hopefully getting a certain mascot to do the obstructed view seat with you. And it happened. For those of you who haven't seen it yet, go to CFB Campus Tour on X. There it is. We're looking at it right now. Big Red participated in your obstructed view seat. How was that for you? And I know you've gotten a ton of engagement on it so far.
Yeah, I mean, this is what dreams are made of. I'm not trying to exaggerate too much, but you know, we have ideas, and you and I have talked offline about things that we want to try or pull off. And Western Kentucky, credit to them, they really understand the connection between social media and engagement. And when you say social media wants this, it's really people want this. And so there's a fascination with Big Red. Everybody loves Big Red. Big Red can do anything. And that's what was cool, seeing Big Red dance on stage with Flo Rida. So came up at the end of the first quarter. He had an opening in his schedule. I just said, hey, I need you to sit a couple places. Did that, no problem. Felt bad because fans started to swarm a little bit after we did our thing. But to put that up there, just an obstructed view alert, and A, not have a school upset about it, and B, be able to put a guest star like Big Red in it. Like you said, it went crazy, and I'm really glad that people got to see it, because it just is one of those things you want to lean into the fun. College football is fun. Weekday CUSA is fun. Big Red is fun. Why don't we just put it all together? And I'm so happy with the way it turned out.
Yeah, I absolutely loved it. Lean into the fun. I love how you say that. That is so true. There's a lot of things about college football that are very serious, but it can be very, very fun at times too. And your account and what you're doing definitely leans into the fun. So, Michael, so sadly, Weekday CUSA is over, and this is your last stop for Conference USA so far this season, unless you end up at our championship game. You've got a lot more games coming down the pipe, though. How many are you at so far for the season right now?
So Western Kentucky was officially halfway to 100. That was number 50. And to get 50 games in before Halloween kind of even blows my own mind. But we're on the downside of this, and we're going to try to, you know, I'm at South Carolina State today, Florida Atlantic tomorrow, two games on Saturday, Western Carolina, and then Clemson, and then we'll just do it again. But I will tell you, you know, looking back on this last month, it wasn't, you know, there's always strategic planning in the games, but I couldn't have picked eight better games to go to, from Jacksonville State, Liberty, starting things off week one, getting to do that New Mexico State, UTEP double, and then seeing Kennesaw State and FIU, Vice Night, and the huge upset. And then these two games, Tuesday, Wednesday, Sam Houston and Western Kentucky. That's all you could ask for. So unfortunately, I didn't hit all 10 schools. I am looking forward to next year going to Delaware and Missouri State. I've only seen them in the FCS, so hopefully we can run this back. But I appreciate everything Conference USA did, helping me out, cooperating, and I feel like it's been a real fun partnership this month in October.
Absolutely, and we appreciate everything that you've done for us as well. Good luck going to 100, and hopefully we will see you again at Weekday CUSA next year.
Absolutely. Appreciate you. Thank you, Sarah.
All right, everybody. Huge thank you again to our friend Michael Barker at CFB Campus Tour for his final Weekday Warrior segment here with us on CUSA Insider. Now that the conclusion of Weekday CUSA has come and gone, Michael actually won't be visiting any more Conference USA campuses for the rest of the football season, unfortunately, but we wish him the best of luck the rest of the way. We are wishing him well to get to 100 games in one football season, which is just absolutely insane. And we actually have a game coming up this Saturday, which we need to preview. We haven't talked about it yet. So coming up on Saturday, November 2nd, we have Middle Tennessee taking on UTEP at 2:30 p.m. Central Time on CBS Sports Network. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, you know, like you said, unfortunately, I had to say goodbye to Week Taste USA. It was a lot of fun. We had 8 games that were decided by single digits in, this year. So just a really fun campaign, and really excited to see, you know, how, you know, just how productive it was, how much exposure it got the schools.
Yeah.
And, but anyways, like you said, moving on back to Saturdays. Middle at UTEP, we're still on linear TV. We got this on CBS
Sports right.
Network. But, you know, Blue Raiders looking to extend their winning streak over the Miners to 5 games. Both teams coming off a loss in Week 9. So, you know, Middle Tennessee, again, another one of those teams. We talked about it with FIU earlier. You know, there's still an outside chance of a bowl appearance if, you know, they kind of clean some things up down the stretch of the season. But, you know, this one, I kind of look to the matchup of the Middle Tennessee offense against UTEP's defense. I think earlier in the year we had talked about UTEP's pass defense, you know, being towards the top of the league. You know, they've stumbled the last few weeks, surrendered 238 yards a game in the last 3 contests, going against this Middle Tennessee offense that is second in CUSA with 262.3 passing yards a game. So I think if, you know, Nick Vadiato, Amari Kelly, those guys can get the ball moving down the field, you know, potentially a win and kind of keeps those bowl hopes alive. But yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie to you. I'm trying to cheering for UTEP to pick up another one. Here, get them to 2-7 on the season, 2-4 in conference play. It's going to be a defensive battle for the Miners and an offensive one for the Blue Raiders, like what you said. But I'm interested to see how coming off of that very, very defensive battle with Sam Houston last week, how that affects that UTEP squad, because I guarantee you those guys were hurting coming off of that battle with the Bearcats where, I mean, there was a lot of hitting then happening in that game. So interested to see how that all plays out, but rooting for Scotty Walden on that one. This is 2 new head coaches again in the league. We've had that a couple of times this season, just how our coaching carousel turned out over the summer. But I really do think that the Miners might take this one. Home games in the Sun Bowl are hard to beat.
Yeah.
So we'll have to see how that one turns out.
And I mean, yeah, back to your point, like seeing them get that first one was so exciting. It would be kind of fun to see him, you know, get another one.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, getting to see Scotty Walden celebrate and, you know, break out a 40-inch vertical to celebrate a victory is pretty impressive. So,
all right, Coach Mason, if you guys win this week, 40-inch vertical. Okay. All right. And then I will eat crow when I come back about the Blue Raiders winning, even though I picked the Miners. So really looking forward to seeing that one again. That one is going to be at 2:30 p.m. Central Time on CBS Sports Network on national television. We're moving back to Saturdays. It feels weird, like what we were saying earlier, which is crazy because it feels weird to play football on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, but we've gotten used to it around here. So really excited to watch that one. But we have a fun Halloween edition of an interview coming up. We were talking about who do we want to have on the show this week? And I thought, you know, we have a team that doesn't dress in costume, but they dress up their uniforms almost each and every week. And so we are going to get to talk to WKU head football equipment manager Ben Hayden. He joined us this morning and I learned so much about the equipment room and how much crazy, crazy work it takes to put 12 uniform combinations on the field in one season, which is just absolutely bonkers. So thank you guys for joining us today. We hope you enjoy this interview with WKU equipment manager Ben Hayden. All right, everybody, joining us today on CUSA Insider, we have a very special guest. We thought for the Halloween episode, why not bring in one of the best equipment managers in the game from WKU? Ben Hayden is joining us today. Ben, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you guys for having me.
Well, first question that I think it's a broad one, but hopefully you can answer it for us is what goes into your thought process or your team's thought process when you start thinking about what you guys can do with football uniforms? Because you guys have done a ton of really crazy and great stuff this year, but this is the first year you've done it. I mean, you're talking about the big red logo on the helmets. Obviously, this year, the big red eyes on the helmet. How do you guys come up with this stuff?
I guess it's just kind of a group effort. It's definitely something that usually starts with just sitting in the office. And honestly, it's most everything that we've done has started because of working on creating something for apparel for the team, for the players. So we'll, like the eyes, for example, when we were renovating our locker room 2 years ago, I guess, maybe it was last year. Everything moves quickly, so I forget the time.
Right, it's tough.
We renovated the locker room in the spring, I think, of 2023, and we were working out of the visiting team locker room for the players, and when they got back from spring break, it was going to be the first time that they were coming back to the facility and our side of it since, I guess, before we left for the bowl game that year to go to New Orleans. And we had gotten a jacket way after we had originally planned to receive it from Nike. It just, you know, during that time there were some, I think, delays still with manufacturing just from COVID, and things just took a little bit longer, and we had this jacket sitting there that we were going to give to the players, and we were sitting there thinking like, well, it's a red jacket, what could we put on it? And we thought, hey, the eyes might look kind of cool on that. So we got the eyes put on this jacket for the players when they came back. We gave it to them. It was a huge hit. It was really fun. And it kind of was just born from there because it's a red jacket. And if the eyes are on apparel or a helmet, we knew, okay, it has to be red for it to make any sense. And once we decided this last season, we were going to retire our chrome helmets and get them all painted red. So our chrome helmets are our red helmets.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. I didn't know that.
And, we knew at that point, okay, the big red helmet last year was such a hit that this is what we're going to try for 2024. And it ended up working out. I personally didn't think that it was going to be as big of a hit as last year's. I told everybody over and over that was involved in the process that, hey, don't get your hopes up from a marketing or exposure standpoint. I don't see it being as creative in my mind. Like, seven different logos on a helmet. No one has ever done something like that.
Right.
Or I guess maybe Navy had done it a few times. This year, actually, I don't know what the final numbers are, but I think it was probably two or three times larger in terms of exposure and all those, the media clicks and things like that. So that was very cool. We were really happy with that.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting coming from you because, I mean, like you just alluded to, like you're talking millions and millions of views on this. So the fact that, yeah, even you were just like, you know, a little unsure. But I mean, you've got to be the envy of a lot of equipment managers across the country because of what you have at your disposal from a branding and a mascot standpoint. I mean,
yeah.
I think Sarah and I would say without a shadow of a doubt that he is the greatest mascot in the country. But how much fun has it been to really just embrace that? And I don't know, you know, I don't want to put you on the spot, but what's been your favorite project to work on in your 8 years there at WKU?
Well, number one, yes, I think that Big Red is it's definitely a top five mascot, and it's very easy to brand.
It's number one in my heart. I'll tell you that, Ben.
Yeah. Well, I think if you look at just the names of different mascots, like I grew up in Michigan, so I knew obviously Sparty is a large national brand that people recognize. And I think if you have the same sort of mascot that people recognize at a smaller school like Western Kentucky, that just says a lot about the mascot and the branding behind it, because everybody knows the big schools. Everyone knows their uniforms. They know their mascots. And sorry, there's some construction going on.
No worries.
It really makes it easy for me because if we have the, if we're given the creative space to work on something like that, then I mean the opportunities are kind of endless with Big Red, especially if we have, like we were talking about with the red helmet, that really helped. My favorite project, I think, has probably been just these big red helmets the last three seasons. So it started in 2022, and it was kind of a, it was a surprise. Like, we had always had the decals. We had samples made for a few years at that point, where we would just put the helmet out for recruiting, and it was, it looked cool in pictures and things like that. And that, that was all internal. Like, no one, I think maybe some recruits would have pictures for their personal use, but there was never anything posted on social media or anything like that. And then at some point or another, our old SID, Tyler Roper, he had kind of mentioned something to Coach Helton. Hey, I think that this would actually be a really cool idea. And Coach Helton said, hey, I mean, if the players want to do it and you think the fans would enjoy it, then let's do it. So we played UAB in 2022 here at home. And I found out the next day that, hey, Coach Helton said that, I mean, if you guys want to try and do it and you can get the decals, then let's do it. So we ordered those. Well, I think we played a road game in between. And by the time we came back, you know, we had already started working on switching the decals on the black helmet that year to the big red helmet. And the next home game, I don't remember who we played, but we wore them and they took off. And our quarterback, Austin Reed, was kind of the promo figure in that. And he had the visor on with the red, the eyes. And
so awesome. I remember that. Yeah.
And that's actually kind of where that, you know, we had already had the eyes logo at that point, but when, I mean, I think Conference USA actually emailed us, or someone from the NCAA, and said, hey, like, just so you know, we're just making sure that you guys aren't wearing those visors for the game, correct? No. It's a promo thing. It's not going to see the field. But that got me thinking, then the next year, we should have made the eyes the front bumper that's, you know, above the face.
Eye, yep.
Which is what we did last year, and then we did logos, and then this year that obviously transitioned into the helmet. And I think just being a part of it and seeing the, you know, excitement amongst our students, they love it. The players love it. The fans obviously really enjoy it, just locally, but also nationally. It's cool to see people engage with Western that don't usually engage with us, you know, all over, like Reddit, college football, and Game Day, and ESPN.
It goes committee. They love you guys.
So it's neat to see that. But then that all just comes from, we have a phenomenal social media team that handles everything from a marketing standpoint. And Jared McDonald and Jack Todd this year and last year have done a great job. And before that, it was Tyler Roper. And they do, I mean, they're like the brain behind everything. Our old, my old assistant, Connor Coker, who's at Western Michigan now, he worked hand in hand with them pretty much on everything. And now that's our new assistant, Michael Clem. And our truck driver has always said that when he observes my leadership, he says he's always gotten a kick out of the fact that I'll tell someone to do something and I try to let the ball roll downhill from there. I give those guys freedom in what they want to do. As long as the end result is what I envisioned it as, then I'm happy. I'm not concerned with how they get there.
Delegation is key there, Ben. I do have a question for you. For some people who might be listening who don't know what you guys do on a weekly basis to get ready for a Saturday game day or a Tuesday game day or a Wednesday, you know. But what do you have to do to get those uniforms ready for all of the players leading up to a game day, especially when you're like changing out helmet decals and stuff? What all goes into that?
That process is a long process if you're changing decals. Our students will start that pretty much right away. I mean, there's a video on our social media account. I think the day after we wore the eyes, we were starting to take the decals off to get them ready for our next game, which we've not worn the red helmets again since then. So that will be another surprise coming up here.
Ooh, can't wait.
Yeah, those will be, I think it's not going to do the numbers the eyes did, but people will like them. So that happens right away. And that was almost a month ago.
Yeah.
At this point. So, and we just finished those up, I think, last week. And we're particular. I mean, if we're going to put a helmet out there on TV and it's going to be all over Twitter and Instagram, then I want it to look good. I'm particular about where the warning label goes and what the numbers look like underneath the American flag on the back. All those details go into it for us. We'll change face masks if they don't look good or if they're damaged. A lot of our offensive linemen will, you know,
I'm sure that they're really scratched up.
They're even like flattened. Some of them are Tick Leslie. We'd probably go through a new face mask for him after every single game because his gets so dented.
And wow.
It's a safety feature first and foremost. So we want to make sure that it's working properly. But aside from helmets, I mean, we checked just today. I've already got people down there. We washed all the jerseys and pants last night, and we already knew throughout the game. We noticed nameplates were falling off, they were tearing on the back a little bit, and numbers tear, and we'll take those to the seamstress this afternoon and get those fixed. Laundry is done. Now we'll start sorting that. And you know, players after a win, especially, they're excited. They get changed. They want to get out of there quickly. So we've got socks laying all over the ground, and compression shorts, and t-shirts, and we have to add all that stuff back to their specific game loop, which is what we call it in equipment. It's just a laundry strap that they put all their stuff on. So we now have to organize that, get it ready for the next game. It takes to check and double check and triple check everything. It takes 3 to 4 days probably to get that ready. And if we needed to turn a helmet quickly, we could. But you need a couple days to do it for sure.
Wow. Wow, that's crazy. Well, I did have one more question for you. And so I just wondering, how many uniform combinations are you guys doing this year? Do you know?
Well, we won't wear the same one twice.
So, yeah, okay. That's so crazy.
If you include, we may have a uniform that might appear to be similar, but it would probably either have like a different face mask or a different decal on it. I don't think that we are. I would have to look. We did get thrown a curveball at the beginning of the year because of the Eastern Kentucky game. We hosted EKU.
Yes.
And we ended up not being able to wear all white. So that kind of threw us for a curveball. And the plan had to get changed. You know, we sit down and whenever the season schedule gets released in the spring, whenever that happens, that's when we usually will sit down and start looking at what combinations we can wear, and then
wow,
present that to our marketing staff so then they can plan for last night. It was our blackout on campus, and EKU was supposed to be the whiteout, and the Big Red game was the redout. So that gives them an opportunity to plan. They'll come back and give us feedback, and then we always go from there. So we didn't wear the same combination twice last year. We won't wear it twice this year, and that will, if we end up playing for the conference championship and we will play in a bowl game, now that might get thrown off, but we don't consider the postseason games as kind of part of the main 12 games in the uniforms that we're going to wear.
Do you think that there is any other school in the country, or how many more schools in the country do you think do 12 different uniform combinations during the season?
I would have to say, I mean, I would guess that Oregon.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, that's true. I forgot about them.
They've got unlimited resources and a lot of different helmets, so it's easier for them. We have 3 jerseys, 3 pants, and 3 helmets. We do have 3 face masks, but I don't really like considering the face mask as like part of it. I don't think that really makes it that much different, but what's 3 times 3 times 3? I guess that's 27 different combinations that we
I don't math. That sounds right.
So, you know, we'll be able to stretch that out, and switching the decals helps. But Oregon can do so many different things with it. If we had the resources, you know, from a standpoint of being a Power 5 major university that's got this relationship with their apparel provider that pretty much allows them to do whatever they want, because Phil Knight was an innovator and he loves that school. So they're going to always be able to do some really, really awesome things. And one of my favorite uniforms actually from football was probably, I think, I don't know, 8 to 10 years ago, they did a mascot look similar to how we did, where Oregon wore orange socks and cleats, and they had white pants with a green top. And
yep, I remember that.
With the orange duckbill face mask, and looked like their mascot. And I thought that was an incredible idea. Subconsciously, that's probably where I started thinking, like, well, we should do something like that with our mascot. And they're innovative, and they're, you know, kind of on the leading edge of everything. So I would say that they're probably up there. I'm sure there's some other schools, but it's hard to pay attention to what everybody else is doing during.
Of course. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you one thing. After y'all's game last night, there was some stuff going on with Big Red doing the obstructed view seat with our friend over at CFB Campus Tour, Michael Barker, and just how people are getting involved with all of the fun on social media WKU is. And somebody tweeted out, I wish I remember what account, but like, WKU is doing it right. Football is a serious game, but it also can be unserious. And I feel like you guys play that line perfectly with all of the Big Red stuff on the helmets. Like, yes, a classic football uniform look is fantastic. I went to Alabama. We literally have two uniforms. We wear the same ones every week. And so I like a classic look, but it's fun to be unserious. It is fun to put a giant set of eyeballs on the side of your helmet and go play football. So you guys are doing awesome stuff there, WKU. We appreciate it here at the conference office, all of the fun uniform combinations you guys do. And as a league, we have some really fun ones too with what FIU does with Vice Night and so on and so forth.
FIU, yeah. Great job with those. Those are incredible.
Shout out FIU.
Yeah. And like you said, it's fun. Football is a serious sport. When we're out at practice, like, it's not like we're out there goofing around and, you know, it's the real deal. Like, you want to do your job, you want to do it well. We're lucky here that Coach Helton has allowed us to have some freedom in the creative space. Todd Stewart, the athletic director, and President Caboni allow us to use, you know, ideas that we can come up with and run with them. And we haven't had any that have like failed miserably yet. I hope they like you said, it is also fun. And in the times that we've released these helmets, I think especially this year is kind of it's a great example of what social media can do for your brand and for, you know, whatever it is. If it's a university, if it's an apparel company, if it's a podcast, we weren't playing a game and we were one of the most talked about teams in the country.
Right.
Because of some stickers that we put on a helmet. And I think that speaks volumes for what creative ideas can do. And like you said, Sarah, you went to Alabama. They don't need that. They're always going to be one of the
true
football teams. And I'll leave you guys with this. I think the tradition aspect does play a large role. Like, Michigan has their winged helmet. Alabama, their, you know, crimson uniforms. And one of my favorite movies ever was Catch Me If You Can with Leo DiCaprio and Tom Hanks. And he says that the Yankees always win because their opponents can't take their eyes off the pinstripes. And that's kind of always stuck with me. And the Yankees are obviously like the Alabama of the major leagues. They win a lot. They didn't win last night, but they have their pinstripe uniforms and they're not going to change those. And one time that they did, I remember this was like in 2011 or 12, New Era asked the Yankees to wear an alternate cap because they were struggling with sales. So they wanted them to wear the hat in a game. They wore the hat for one game, and their all-time great closer, Mariano Rivera, blew a save against the Detroit Tigers, and they never wore those hats again. So sometimes you stick with tradition, but when in our position, you know, where it gets us that type of attention nationally, the exposure is worth more than, you know, anything else that we would be able to come up with. So.
Yeah, Ben, we can't wait to see what you guys come up with going through the rest of the season, what you guys come up with next year. I'm so excited. Just, you know, you got to one up yourself every year. So, Ben, thank you so much for joining us today. Enjoy a day of rest, a little, no, laundry. Enjoy a day of laundry.
Yep.
And we will see what you guys wear again next week.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, Sarah and Josh. Really appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks, Ben. Thank you again to Ben Hayden for taking time out of his very busy schedule to talk to us here on CUSA Insider Pod. Well, I mean, we've pretty much finished the show, but there's one thing that I have not mentioned yet. We've talked about women's soccer, cross country, volleyball, football, but CUSA hoop season starts on Monday, November 4th, everyone. We have games starting as early as 11 a.m., and a lot of them are going to be on ESPN+. So make sure you go to our website, check out that schedule. We've got 9 games in action on the women's side and 8 games in action on the men's side just on Monday. So the CUSA hoop season is finally here. We are excited to get it underway. Make sure you go ahead to our website and check out that schedule. All right. Thank you so much again to all of our guests that we had join the show today. If you are watching us here on YouTube, we thank you very much. We hope you're enjoying the show. And if you're listening on Apple, Spotify, or Amazon Music, make sure you are subscribed to the show so that you never miss a new episode. Also, go ahead and go like us on X or Instagram at CUSA Insider Pod. And if you have something you would like to tell us, we actually have an email address set up that you can reach out to us at any time. It's CUSAInsiderPod@conferenceusa.com. All right, everyone. That is all I have for you today. Happy Halloween to those who celebrate. Enjoy trick-or-treating tonight. Hope you get your favorite candy. And we will see you again same time next week. You are listening to CUSA Insider Pod, the official podcast of Conference USA. I'm Sarah Rudolph, signing off.